This is Christian Robillard, and you're listening to Beyond the Bake Sale, where we help you raise more time, talent, and treasure in innovative, creative, and effective ways for the causes you care about. On this episode, I sat down with Michael Sangster. Michael is an award-winning executive and community leader with over 30 years of experience. Michael has an unprecedented talent for activating change, cultivating relationships, and rescuing troubled partnerships through skillful negotiation and consensus building. In the community, Michael has raised over $1.5 million for children at risk through his founding of the Hill Charity Golf Classic Tournament, is a board member of OutCare Foundation, is the community chair of the Ottawa Police Service Gala, and is one of the founders of the Ottawa Giving Group, a giving circle located here in the nation's capital. Michael has also been recognized for his volunteerism and philanthropy with the Ottawa Police Community Leadership Award, the Diamond Jubilee Medal Award, and Volunteer of the Year from the Ottawa Food Bank, to name but a few. In our sit-down, we discussed the Ottawa Giving Group, butter tarts, and working with high-impact volunteers. So I hope you enjoy this episode. Michael, welcome to the show. It's a real pleasure to have you here.
Really excited to be here. Looking forward to it.
Mm-hmm. And I remember we serendipitously connected through one of our mutual friends, colleagues, Mark Taylor on Twitter, which is always a fun thing, how Twitter is able to bring people together in that fantastic way. And really keen to talk to you about your experiences as really a community leader and champion within the Ottawa community and all that you've done for the city and a number of the causes that you care so passionately about. So the first question I have, which I think is the most important, is really around the amount, if you can even recall, of charitable bake sales you've ever been dragged to and how you feel every time you're dragged out to one of those bake sales.
See, here's the problem. I like stopping at bake sales. I've got a sweet tooth, so I'll often pull into them, so I don't have a problem with them.
Oh, okay.
I do have a little chuckle when I drive by sometimes, seeing how much time and effort has gone into raising a small amount of money. But everything has its place and everything has its role. And it's fun to stop in and see that very hands-on relationship people have with their own charities and their own churches or whatever group it is.
Absolutely. And then do you have a most like memorable treat or baked good or a particular treat that you try to go for when you go to those bake sales?
Butter tarts, no raisins.
Butter tarts, no raisins. Interesting. I always find that butter tarts almost always have raisins.
Yeah, I'm a butter tart, no raisin guy.
Okay, gotcha. Well, if we ever meet up at a bake sale, I'm happy to eat any of the raisins out of
the
butter
tart. You take the raisins, and if they're selling Cheesies on the side, not Cheetos, I will buy a bag of Cheesies wherever I go.
I love it. Well, all bake sales aside is what I like to call the gateway drug into the fundraising space. I know that you've had a ton of experience in being such a proud community volunteer, and was wondering if you might be able to share as a starting point, you know, what was your early involvement in this sector like from a volunteer capacity or from a work capacity or however you choose to answer it?
Well, I've been lucky to do both. Started out, I've had every break in the world, every opportunity given to me in life. So there was also that came along with that with my parents was a direction at some times, but also just an encouragement to always give back to our communities and to do something. So lots of great memories to go back on from working as a director of development for the Children's Hospital Foundation in Manitoba and helping them do some of the amazing work they were doing in research in Winnipeg, but also having volunteered with them for years and stepping in and joining the staff for a while to help out, but volunteering and being a part of bingo nights on Friday nights in Winnipeg and doing lots of other different things. So I've always been lucky in life. So I've always felt and been driven to give those things back. So I've always had some sort of charity program on the go, something going on. It's driven my professional career. I've probably gotten more back than I've given through my time of doing something that keeps you charged up, forces you focus back on the work you need to get done because you want to free up and go do this other thing that's fun.
Absolutely. And then I guess going off of that, has your volunteer involvement or your involvement in the charitable sector pushed you or driven you or pulled you in certain directions in your career or in your life that you're grateful that it has?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the greatest experiences when I spent 13 years at TELUS Corporation and watching how they drove a community engagement charitable giving program into the employees. And they didn't have to drive it. It was already there, but they just formalized it a bit and drove it out into the community. It's a really neat model they developed where the community board members are giving away the money for the corporation. they're finding the greatest need. So within my professional career, it was very neat to watch that and sit on a board of nine people as an employee, knowing that we had three votes and they had six. Mm-hmm. And we were going to find the best organizations to spend our corporate donation dollars. So that was fun to watch, fun to be a part of.
Yeah, absolutely. And in terms of sourcing some of those groups, what was the methodology or the process for finding some of these groups to, whether it's serve on that community board to really identify the greatest needs of the community, but also be able to find those eligible projects that were to give and to provide the biggest benefit for the community at that given time.
So TELUS rolled out a community board in almost every city they operated, sometimes by region. And in Ottawa, it was $400,000 to $600,000 a year, if I could remember, in different years. So they had a very formalized process where they took in the applications and then brought to the board. And we'd have the chief of police. We'd have the head of the United Way. We had the people on the ground that were actually dealing with these organizations. They knew the best. If I give you a quick example, we were going to fund a group, and there was just something in the room didn't feel right. And you could just tell. And it wasn't, and I won't name names, but mm-hmm. but one of the chiefs of police who sat on the board at the time looked over at the head of the United Way, and there were some eyes, and you could just tell. And both of them kind of said, this is not the right group. This is the right project. Give us 3 months. We'll come back with the right group. Mm-hmm. And we did that. And another one that was a fantastic one, we funded an organization just to provide, I'll keep it a little gray so that I'm not naming who they were, but to fund two pieces of equipment, call it $3,000, so they could take care of some remedial duties they would do at home. They can come there and do them. Couldn't quite figure out why this was such an urgent need and why we'd fund this project. But as we learned from the people in the group, that organization was coming forward and they were going into another room while they were taking care of these tasks, and they were learning a second language. They were learning English. They were learning how to do math. They were learning how to be picking up other skills that maybe culturally they couldn't do back in their community. That was a really neat project. TELUS would never have found that. Thousands of lives changed. We never would have found that organization. We wouldn't have found the project.
Absolutely.
So that's a neat one.
Absolutely. And I think that really speaks to how bringing together the right people really allows you to look at issues with the right lens too, and saying that, okay, well, these externalities will now be removed from the equation and we'll be able to get to what the actual root cause mm-hmm. of the issue is and be able to make those systemic changes to improve people's lives, be it having that one piece of equipment to help alleviate a certain issue so that they can focus on the thing that will improve their lives the most, whether it's language training, whether it's be able to care for their children better, whether it's better quality of life, whatever that might be.
And back to your first opening remarks about a bake sale, that $1,200 raised can have a bigger impact on someone's life than $100,000 to another organization. Mm-hmm. So we joke about it a little bit. That can have as big of an impact.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I would definitely say so. And I would say that one of the biggest manifestations of how an amount like a $1,200 can make in somebody's life mm-hmm. are these giving circles, these vehicles for philanthropic change and for donations and for really direct community investment. And I think, one of the things I was really excited to talk to you about is the formation of this Ottawa Giving Group, a new mm-hmm. giving circle. And was wondering if you could share a little bit, Michael, some of the history and I guess some of the origins behind the Ottawa Giving Circle, and then maybe share a little bit about why you felt it was so important to form something like this.
So sometimes when five or six people get together and have a few beers, something good comes of it. And that's basically what happened. We were getting out of doing another project and a few of us got talking. We'd seen other groups that are doing this. This isn't a new idea. We took a different slant on it. Not that the other projects, the way they do it is different or wrong. We just took a different slant. So we decided to get a group together every couple of months. Next meeting again is, I think, it was September, November, January. And we're going to go out and we've got a collection of group that come together, and it's www.ottawagivinggroup.com. And we get together and we hear from one charity. Four or five of the members are selected. They go away, take in all the applications from the website. They pick the winner. That group comes forward, speaks to us. And if people feel good about it, they give them a donation. We've been averaging just over, I think, $100 a donation from most people. We don't touch anything. We don't do any administration. We have no costs. All the money goes directly to the charity. They issue tax receipts. And we're also about creating connections to those charities. We're encouraging them to talk to the members. So they come to a presentation for 5 minutes or so, and they hang out for an hour and a half with everybody. We have a few beers, bite to eat. Everybody pays their own bill, and we just have a nice time. But at the end of the night, they've raised a significant amount of money towards their project. We're aiming for small charities where it'll make a big difference. And they pick up people and resources. They pick up an accountant. They pick up a lawyer. They pick up somebody who can help them do something. So that's what we're trying to do.
That's fantastic.
Not just raise money, but make connections.
Yeah, of course. And I think that in and of itself is a valuable piece in and of itself to connect people with other people who might be passionate about their cause in the community.
And the other thing we're trying to do, so to your listeners, we don't want this to be 100 of our friends. We want this to be a completely diverse group, and everybody's asked to kind of bring one more the next time. And hopefully they join. Maybe they just give donation one time, they go away. But we're trying to extend out this group. We'd love to be at 1,000 people. You know, we'd love to be at 500 people. We'll see where we get to. But we're trying to broaden out beyond just our own group of friends.
Absolutely.
And that doesn't do us much good either if we're trying to build a broad team.
Yeah, it very much creates a bit of an echo chamber even of, well, these might be our biases towards certain projects or certain causes or whatever that might be. So, Michael, for you, I guess at this point in time and for the rest of your group, are there particular causes or projects? You mentioned that they're mainly coming from small charities and nonprofits, but are there particular elements or features of some of these projects or organizations that you are more seeking out or that are coming in and being vetted in a, not necessarily a preferential way, but kind of a, having that second
look? We're looking for small. We're looking, you know, some people have asked for youth, some people have asked for health, but we've not suggested what it is yet. We've been able to fund some great projects. One that is a group that works with CHEO to provide a lunch program to some of the kids that are in special programs there to give them a fresh meal. Teach them skills. That's been just a fantastic group for us. We're going to do one in September with a dance group that works with challenged individuals in the community. And they're a great group. Dandelion, I think it's called. I'm pulling a blank here. So we've not framed it down. We do a random draw and five people from one meeting go away and take all the applications and they pick who gets the money the next time. And then it's up to the people how much they want to give, if they want to give. We're also saying to people, come on in, $25, that's great. We're not saying you have to give $100. You don't have to give every time. If you can that time, great. If you can't, the only thing we won't let anybody come in and do is do marketing. We're not, nobody's coming in here to sell homes.
Absolutely. No, that makes a ton of sense. But I can imagine that those types of people, those very high-achieving, successful individuals are some of the people that are starting to come into the Ottawa Giving Group. And was wondering if you could share maybe some insights about how it's been keeping those high, I would say high functioning, high performing individuals involved in the Ottawa Giving Group.
Yeah, so we're just getting going. We've had three meetings. We've taken a little break over the summer here. We go back up in September. The biggest problem is their schedules and trying to get a time that works. So we've gone 5:30 to 7:30, trying to stay out of the downtown core so we don't have traffic. But we were trying to find dates and serve, and we've just given up. We're setting dates for the next three meetings. They go out September, November, December, and January. If you can't make it, you can't make it because we can't find their schedules to work. Interestingly, at one of the last meetings, we had a bit of an ice storm and we had a good crowd, but we didn't have what we hoped for. I think about 25 people donated online.
That's really powerful.
Who took the moment and said, you know, I'm still supporting this. I think it's great. So that's what we're looking for. And the key is there's no administration costs, no fees for anybody to join too. We just want to create a great group of people. We're hoping to hear about that of that person who joins the board of directors because of it. That's what we're hoping for is one of those moments too.
Absolutely. And I think, again, as we talked about before, facilitating those connections is so key. And especially if you're creating those lifetime donors or those people who just feel so passionately about a cause but don't necessarily know the organizations that might be operating the space, that can be, again, incredibly transformational.
If I can add, what's interesting, some people don't know how to get on board of directors. They don't know how to volunteer. They don't know how to get asked. And some charities don't know how to go find those people. So if we help with that, great. But there's a lot of people who want to go give. They want to go give their time and they don't actually know how to go do it. How to don't have that person they can call.
And that's an interesting segue, Michael. And I imagine that based on us reading some of your backgrounder and just hearing about kind of your name throughout the community, you've been asked or have chosen to involve yourself in a number of different boards, committees, those types of groups. I was wondering if you have any suggestions for charities or nonprofits, big or small, who are approaching individuals like yourself saying we'd love for you to be involved, and what has been successful from charities that have recruited you to ultimately be part of their project?
I think almost every time I've gotten on a board, whether the palliative care work I'm doing now, which I'm passionate about, Food Bank, which I was very passionate about, Children's Hospital work I've done, plus my own golf tournament with a couple of friends that we've organized over the years. It always resonates. The issue resonates first. I'm not going to go join a board of directors if I don't feel passionate that I'm going to give my time. The other thing is when I've been approached, I've liked the people who've brought to me, this is what we want you to do. And this is the commitment. different points in my career, I've traveled a lot, been very busy. It's been hard to go to meetings, but I could still contribute. And that's what I like to have, is that honest dialogue going in as to what do you want? What do you need me to do? Don't surprise me a couple months later, which I've never had. I've always been lucky with different organizations I've worked with.
For our listeners, maybe a bad example of an organization who may have approached you to say, we'd love for you to be involved, but they did it in a way that didn't quite resonate with you or didn't quite jive with you in the way that it probably should have, or they did it in a way that was borderline, whether it's disrespectful or not really conscious of what you might have been interested in or something to that effect. A bit of a war story, if you would.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of a bad example. It's not like there's 100 boards out there asking me to come join them.
I find that hard to believe.
Tended to be organizations that you have some connection to. So I think about that a little bit, but I can't think of a horror story. There was mm-hmm. one organization that I had been very vocal about some of the changes they needed to do, and they came back and chatted with me about taking on a role, a small charity in town. But I was so of a different view of what they were doing and how they were doing it. Very high admin costs, a small group. That one I was uncomfortable with because I knew it wasn't going to change when the leadership was there.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I try to be honest with myself too. But if you're not passionate about it, if you don't want to be involved, you're not going to be a good volunteer.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So. And if you're not someone who's willing to open up their wallet and make some type of contribution, mm-hmm. then chances are you're probably not going to be very aligned with what this organization is trying to do.
Yep. And the time is in many cases is as important. I like boards that don't ask for money.
Mm-hmm.
If you end up passionate about it, you probably give money.
Yeah.
They ask for your time and your advice and your thinking, and they make you part of the organization and part of the team. That's valuable.
Yeah, of course.
I can't imagine what it's like to be an executive director or CEO of some of these places and 10 or 12 men and women show up and start giving advice every month for 3 hours and then they go away.
Yeah.
It's got to be hard to do when you got to go do all the hard work. So I've seen some mm-hmm. great leaders and some poor leaders.
Yeah, absolutely.
Been lucky.
Mm-hmm. And then when you're making your decision about being involved or not involved with a group, I think looking at the leadership is a really important mm-hmm. part in seeing whether or not they're able to achieve and actually going to take your advice on its own. Are there certain elements that you look for in the leadership of certain groups or even just things that leader or the leadership, broadly speaking, says or does or emulates that you're like, that's a group I want to be a part of, or this is a red flag. Let's not go down this road.
I look at one thing in my professional and philanthropy career, I guess. I always look for people who've put together succession plans, who have figured out how they're going to make the organization better and how they're going to leave. So I think it's a strange way to look at it in many ways, but it tells you that someone is taking their job very seriously. They're going to leave the place in the right shape. They're going to take it up a level. They've got some vision of where they're going to get to. They're not just coming in and turning on the lights in the morning and leaving at the end of the day. Sometimes mm-hmm. the vision is to shrink the organization. Sometimes it's to merge it. We did at the Boys and Girls Club when I was on their board with the Police Youth Center. I was on their board of directors, and we merged into the Boys and Girls Club. And there's a lot of people didn't want to see that happen. It was a very difficult decision. We ended up kind of reverse taking over the Boys and Girls Club because most of our management team went over because they were such visionaries and they were doing such amazing stuff. And they ended up taking over Camp Smitty with one of the police officers from the Police Youth Center, and Claude Turgeon went over and took over the Boys and Girls Club. And we ended up changing that place. It ended up being both organizations ended up being much better.
Yeah, absolutely.
Much better for it.
Mm-hmm. And I remember when I used to work for the club and being involved with a lot of those people, I think Tom Patrick's one of those people.
Tom,
and
man, Camp Smitty, you know, a great guy.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember growing up with those people and hearing some of those stories of the courage that it actually took to allow an organization to blend into another one. Mm-hmm. We think it's often like a sign of weakness of like, oh, these people can't survive on their own. But yep. I think it's more of in that case, it was a sign of strength to show that we're not in this business. So it's time for us to let yep. the people who are in this business and who are able to do this the most effectively.
And interestingly, the United Way played a bit of a role at the time too, guiding people, encouraging that kind of bring together, create better organizations. Sometimes it's bigger, sometimes it's smaller.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, Tom's a great leader in this city. Great yeah, leader.
Absolutely.
There's 1,000 kids walking around that Tom has impacted.
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah. The bearded ginger giant is like we like to call him. So
yeah, he can get your attention quickly when he needs to.
That he can. That he can.
Yeah.
So to backtrack a little bit, Michael, I want to go back to some of your work with the Ottawa Giving Group and even just your reflecting a bit on when you guys were forming the structure, mm-hmm. those types of pieces. And you mentioned that there were some things that you did that were different significantly or nominally from other giving groups out there. wondering if you would be able to share maybe one or two or a few of those pieces that you felt that you guys are doing differently and the importance of the justification for why you decided to do them differently in that particular way.
So the main one is a lot of the other ones I've looked at, they tend to bring together three charities and then each speak and then the people attending pick who they want to give their money to. And I get that model, and there are larger groups than we are, and maybe we'll get there someday and want to do the same thing. But our decision was to try and impact every 2 months one charity in as big a way as possible. And we wanted to make impacting donations where $20,000, $25,000 would make a huge change to the organization. So jokingly, one of the first things we said was, we're not going to support CHEO. Well, at the second event, we supported CHEO because one of the groups came to us and CHEO was supporting them by doing all their accounting and their tax receipting for them so they wouldn't have to do all that administration work. So it became a bit of a joke with the group that, here we go, week two, meeting two, we're giving to CHEO. But it was a fantastic program. It was the right thing to do, and applauded CHEO for what they were doing, taking that on, because there's a lot of administrative logistic work to setting up and doing receipting, and it's probably not worth it for a lot of organizations. So that was the main one, is we chose to just support one charity every meeting instead of three. We've done some other little things too, where people leave some donations and we do other things that night. We've had a little, kick in one year, people threw in $5 and we funded a bit, a scholarship program for a military kid, different things like that too. So we might broaden out. We've talked about trying to get some connection into supporting the military families. But we're trying to stay really focused on every 2 months. We're going to make a big impact for somebody and get out.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's a fantastic way to do it, no matter how you choose to. And was wondering if, in your opinion, whether when you're looking around and seeing some of these other giving circles start to come up, and even some of your justifications for starting the Ottawa Giving Group with the people that you did, do you think there's a reason or a rationale, whether it's a personal one that you hold or one that's collective, that we're seeing more of these giving circles start to manifest and create themselves?
Yeah, I, one of the main reasons we wanted to do it is we don't get together enough as friends. And we wanted to broaden our group out, and so we just decided, let's put this together. Let's force ourselves to get together every 2 months, but when we do it, we'll have some fun. So now let's broaden our group and get a whole bunch of other friends out and get more people. So when we show up, the goal is a year later, you're sitting down with two guys having a beer. You'd never met a year ago, but you're all buddies, and that's a big part of it. But it's forcing us to stop, get away from the grind, get away from the airplanes, get away from the laptops, and just enjoy ourselves for the evening. We've talked about a no phone rule. We haven't got there yet.
It's a hard one.
My addiction might be one of the bigger problems. But we're getting there. And then you've noticed it was the fun part. I knew we got something right when after the third meeting, we looked around and realized that at all three meetings, nobody had taken a photo. And we said, we got to put some photos on the website that are actually of our own people. And we're like, hang on a second here. Nobody was taking photos. They were just enjoying the evening. Nobody was trying to do that. And we found a few on Twitter that people had posted or somewhere, but that to me said we're maybe getting something right. And we'd like this to be alive 20 years from now.
Mm-hmm.
So we're growing it slowly and making sure we get the right people and we have a good time.
Yeah,
but,
of course.
But one of the greatest people in the group knew nobody, showed up at the second meeting, signed up, found the web. So we got to start doing a little bit of marketing, found it and started showing up. And she's a lovely lady. Sat down at a table, started talking to people, moved over to another table, started talking to people. Next thing you know, she brought another friend the next time. That's fantastic. I love interactions like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And it really brings that, I think, that community element to philanthropy that a lot of people often miss. And they ultimately like to see themselves involved in something that is bigger than themselves, something that they feel like they can belong with and that they can use as a bit of a platform to, whether it's meet other people or lead the change they ultimately want to see.
We'll find somebody probably eventually that's just moved to Ottawa and saw it, joined, jumped. It'd be great. All of a sudden makes four or five friends. You made them be a part of our community.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of good spinoffs that can happen.
Yeah. Yeah, without a doubt. So Michael, I guess reflecting back on your journey as a community leader, starting from where you were to where you are now, and obviously trying to have a bit of foresight into the future. If you were to have, I guess, a few pieces of advice that you would give to your kids, grandkids, the younger generation, are there pieces of advice that you would have for them in terms of getting involved and maybe its importance or significance that they should be looking for in it?
Well, first, I wouldn't call myself a community leader. I'm just doing a little bit here and there. So I'd kill that.
A very humble community leader.
No, I think it's just, there's 1,000 people, 10,000 people that have done a lot more and continue to do more than I've ever done. So I would just say get involved. And that's what I tell my kids all the time. I got two lovely daughters and they're both very engaged. And if they go through busier times with stuff they've got going on, they might slip back a little bit, but they're both extremely engaged and want to be a part of making a difference in their community. And so that's all, I think, all you can ask, whether it's for your kids, your grandkids, your buddy who just retired and is looking, I just helped connect somebody who retired to an organization that needs some help. Mm-hmm. And she's going to go in a couple of days a week and chip in and help them out. And there's all kinds of ways, no matter how old you are.
Mm-hmm. And we've talked about this a little bit, Michael, but wondering if you have any advice for charities or nonprofits out there that are looking to really keep individuals like yourself involved in a meaningful way. Because I think there's a difference between attracting someone to a role in the first place, you know, saying the right things in that initial meeting, having, I guess, those right talking points and having the right leadership. But I think it's something else entirely to keep somebody involved over the long term. I was wondering if you could share, are there any particular tips or methods that people have employed to continue to keep you involved in that meaningful way that you found really purposeful?
So, yeah, I guess I'd add one big one is it's around meetings. If you're going to make me come to a meeting, you're going to make somebody else come to a meeting, be well-organized, well-prepared, materials in advance so that somebody can work it into their schedule and be well-prepared to be there. Once you're there, immediately following action items, deliverables, what people promise to do, like that, get that into people's hands as quickly as possible. And that leads me to what my main point is don't keep having the same meeting.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen that on too many boards and companies too, where you just keep going back and having the same discussion over and over again in the same room with the same people and the same voices, but you've not moved the ball down the field.
Mm-hmm.
I'd rather have an executive director come in the room and call me on the carpet because last month you said you're going to do this and you didn't do it, than to go back and have a conversation around the edges again.
Yeah.
Get something done. And if you're the staff, if you say you're going to do something, do it or tell us why not. Okay. Good. Priorities change. Things move around. So those would be the big things to me. I could tell you, I've except for one example, I've had nothing but a fantastic time working with charitable organizations. Mm.
And was wondering if you would be comfortable sharing, no need to obviously say names though, but maybe one example of one that was overwhelmingly positive and one that was overwhelmingly or to a certain degree not as positive that you'd be willing to share so that some of our listeners and organizations can learn from that experience.
Absolutely. So the one I'll be really upfront on the one that was positive, the chairing the 25th anniversary of the Ottawa Food Bank. We went out and did, and I remember going and seeing Scott Lawrence from CGI at the time, great community leader, and saying, this is what I'm going to try and do. Can you do it? Because they had a fundraising system for walks and run-a-thons that allowed you to take pledges. So we're going to build trees for the food bank. And he said, well, what do you mean? I said, I'm going to get 25 people because it's the 25th anniversary and it's 15 years later and I'm still drawing it with my hands the way I explained it then.
I love that.
He said, we're going to get 25 people and we're going to get them all to give $25 and we're going to get them to find 25 people to give $25 and ask those 25 people to find 25 people to find $25. So this was the idea. We were going to build teams. They had to work with their software a little bit, but they managed to figure it out, create it so that it worked. And we raised what ended up being $1.25 million worth of food, $250,000, which they can say they can buy $5 worth of food because of their purchasing power and the deals they have to help the food bank. But we created an army from Sheila Fraser, the Attorney General, to John Baird, Minister of Transport, Cyril Leader, the CEO of the Ottawa Senators, Jim Durrell. We had a fantastic, I'm not sure Jim was involved in that one with me. We had a fantastic group of 25 people. Wayne Waters, the former clerk of the Privy Council, amazing group of people that came forward, had never been involved, Dennis Jackson, Scotiabank, and stepped up and did something for the food bank.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, we raised a ton of money for food, but we had 25 new community leaders go out and really do a great job of learning the cause and committing to the cause.
Yeah. And then,
the greatest part of the story was Sheila Fraser, the Attorney General of Canada, not the Attorney General, the Auditor General of Canada, the one responsible for finding the lost nickels inside the government, joins the board of directors. And I could see the look on the face of the accountant, lovely lady.
Gets a little nervous, I can imagine.
All of a sudden, the Auditor General is joining your board. And she brought in some great people and helped them transform that department.
Mm-hmm.
And help them out with great people and never acted like the Auditor General.
Of course.
So that was a lot of fun. But I knew when we were done, What we did was fun, but when we were done, we left them with an incredible database and a incredible team of people.
Yeah. And if I can ask as a follow-up to that, we were talking before about the importance of bringing those types of people into the circle and how that is often a huge value of volunteers, not just them giving their time, but bringing their circles of influence mm-hmm. and other individuals into an organization to really affect it long-term. Aside from that specific example, which is a fantastic one, mm-hmm. I was wondering if you could share one or two examples of how that newly created, I guess, sphere of influence and circle of champions was able to help the Ottawa Food Bank later down the road in some way, shape, or form that was either beneficial at a small degree or transformational at the opposite extreme.
Yeah, I left the board about a year later, so I'm not as familiar with what would have been transformational. And the food bank does money in, food out, money in, food out. So there's no big transformations that happen there. Their goal of transformation is they're not needed anymore, but they stay focused on what they need to do. I think what happened was it brought a whole bunch of new companies forward that sustaining fundraising over years to come and new people, new bodies that just made a difference for the organization. I don't think in that example it was necessarily transformational for them. So I think, that's probably the best way. But some of the bodies, mm-hmm. some of the people that came forward, like Sheila Fraser, as I mentioned, was probably the bigger difference.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I know, and I think Scotiabank was involved before, but they were probably more involved afterwards. Mm-hmm. We saw that, definitely.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think those are great examples. And then to continue on with the not as excellent example, or the negative example, mm-hmm. if you want to call it that, would you mind sharing some of the things that they did to want you to not to continue being involved in that particular organization?
Yeah. So it's a different organization, but I was involved in another campaign where we helped them raise a significant amount of dollars. And they didn't do the cleanup they promised on the database.
Oh.
They didn't do the work necessary to turn that into an asset that would raise money for years. And that was very frustrating for me because we had a large group of volunteers working away, trying to accomplish a goal of getting new people in, getting new money in. And when it was done, they just didn't spend the time they promised they would do mm-hmm. on the systems. It wasn't an investment of cash. It was making sure it was all clean. So come the end of the year, they start sending out thank yous and receipts and letters and newsletters, and people were getting 4, 5, 6, 7 of them because they'd given to different parts of the campaign or parts of the different fundraising pitch. So that left a bad taste in my mouth, and I was very disappointed because we went over it and over it and over it again with them, said, do you need resources? Do you need people? What do you need? We can get students. No, we got it, but they weren't doing it. Mm-hmm. And that was disappointing
yeah.
because a lot of time and a lot of effort by a lot of great volunteers.
Absolutely, and that sounds especially frustrating if you put mm-hmm. your trust and ultimately your free time into yep. something that you care about, and this person you can't help to do the small thing that's going to be so important yep. and transformational for them.
No money lost. Nothing like that.
Yeah, of course.
Just the opportunity lost
yeah.
to go forward.
Yeah. It's a volunteer basically saying, we want to be able to invest in your capacity, which I would argue is a fairly rare thing mm-hmm. in this sector, unfortunately, and people being willing to say, we're willing to invest in your capacity to do this good mm-hmm. instead of we want you to have the smallest margins possible. You know, the two can't, they don't necessarily have to go hand in hand. And that's definitely very frustrating.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So then in terms of we're, as we start to kind of wrap up, wanted to ask and reflect on a point that you brought up earlier about expectations around boards of directors and, you know, having basically holding people's feet to the fire when it comes to, you know, you promised to do X, you didn't do X. So I was wondering if you could share some thoughts or some reflections or feedback about how to balance that with also not overburdening or giving too much of your board of directors to do. And how you might work that balance. Because I think that's an important balance of not wanting to put too much on our volunteers, but also requiring something from them.
And I'll add an angle to that. It's also executive director, CEO, being willing to hand off a little control to your board of directors too, and not can keep it all in your own hands. So it comes down to me as has my career expectations. And I've got that wrong more times than I probably got it right, setting my own expectations, setting them for my own team. This is what we're trying to accomplish, when we're trying to accomplish to stay on the task. And I've made more mistakes in my career. I think everybody does, but I've made tons of them. And that's a hard thing to do with a board of directors, to give them, this is what you need to do, this is what you don't need to do, this is what we need you to, and constantly be readjusting that. Be fair, be honest, be transparent, and it'll work out. But set an expectation that nobody can meet. challenge people beyond what they're capable of. Mm-hmm. Those are the kind of things that I think where people get into trouble.
For sure. And then in your experience, are there certain indicators or almost like a litmus test to say, I've watched this person say they're going to do this, but then they kept doing these small little things that no one thought they noticed. And then they just, based on those things, they clearly weren't going to follow through on what they promised they were going to do or anything to that effect, even things that people in our audience can look for when they're managing or working with their boards or senior volunteers to say, they look like they might be struggling, but they're not saying they're struggling. Mm-hmm. So how do we flag that before that actually becomes too much of a problem?
That's a good question. It's things I've done in my own career. People gravitate to what they're comfortable doing sometimes too. And you might promote somebody, you know, perfect example in my own place, you get promoted to another role, you keep doing your old job and you keep doing the things that you're really comfortable doing. You mm-hmm. have the same thing in the not-for-profit sector. But maybe don't have the resources or the training skills available to help somebody get to the next level. I've been very lucky in my career to have mentors that I worked with and great coworkers, great bosses that will stop and say, hey, watch out for that. Are you doing that? I had one when I took a promotion inside a large organization. And like those things you don't do anymore, put a box around them. That's the guy that replaced you. Mm-hmm. Go over here. It's hard to do, though, because you go to where you're comfortable. And the difficult thing you might not want to do, some people, you know, we've all done it. I challenge you to find anybody who hasn't taken the thing they don't want to do and put it as a second priority, mm-hmm. even though it should be number one.
Absolutely. And just letting those things start to creep over and just not feeling like you have any type of control over that or really wanting to still own that so that you don't lose the momentum that yep. you had previously.
So back to expectations. If you've got expectations you can all work on. And I've tried in my career to have people that could come talk to me about the things that are challenging them. Mm-hmm. It's not always easy, though. And you're busy and you're running around, you got eight things on the go, and it's not always easy to get people to step forward and say, I'm struggling here.
Absolutely. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I think as a final question, playing off of exactly that, wanted to ask about your ability to manage both time, but also energy, because you've been in a number of roles, whether it's more of a committee focus, whether it's a chair of a board or a committee, whether it's on a board, other roles. How is it that you're able to manage your energy and manage your time in a way that allows you to achieve all the things that you want to achieve without really, I think, taking away or draining your energy to a significant degree?
I guess I've been lucky. Energy's never been my problem. So the philanthropic work drives me a little bit, but energy's not been the problem. On the other side of the equation, staying organized, staying on task. So you give the example about floating. I'll float to charity work all the time off of other stuff if I could. I enjoy it more than I probably enjoy career stuff at times. So staying focused on what you need to get done, I think everybody struggles on that. I've met some spectacular people who come in the morning with a list and they leave the day and it's done. I don't. I never get done the list ahead at the start of the day.
It seems like more often than not that can be the case.
Three or four things seem to carry over to the next day and you do your best and you plug along. But I guess, you just do your best on that side of it, on getting things done.
Mm-hmm. I think those are great and excellent words. Michael, really appreciate you taking the time to chat with us about your experience and really grateful for all that you do for so many groups in the Ottawa area. So wondering as we close out, are there any things that people can help you with, or are there places people can follow you to stay involved with what it is that you and the different organizations that you work with are up to?
So the OttawaGivingGroup.com, www.OttawaGivingGroup.com is the main one I'm kind of playing with right now, having a good time and making a difference. I don't do a lot of social media. I'd rather spend a little less time on my phone. I'm not as big a user as I guess I could be, but maybe I should. We could do a little good news there to outweigh what's going on south of the border and mm-hmm. as a negative on Twitter. But generally, it's just, There's the one organization, but just get involved. If people always ask me, just do something. Do mm-hmm. one little thing, do another thing, and then do another one. I'm very uncomfortable talking about me in this role. There's literally 100,000 people in this city that do great stuff every single day. Mm-hmm. And it's not about any one person. This is a great community that pulls off amazing things. I've been lucky living here, living in Winnipeg, another town that just does amazing stuff. There's nothing you don't throw at that city and they don't figure it out and get through it. Ottawa's the same way. So pick a group, get engaged, and make a difference.
I think that's great words to end on. But I would also add that while you say that there are, you know, these hundreds of thousands of other people out there making a difference, which there definitely are, we want to thank you for being one of those people to be out there, to be such a leader, to bring people into the space and really to motivate them to want to be involved in these different causes. So really grateful for that.
As long as it's just I'm one of those people, that's all, because there's I've never been involved in anything where there isn't 50 or 100 people that are doing stuff along with you. You just, if you happen to be the chair that year, it doesn't really mean anything. It just means you sit at the end of the table.
Absolutely.
So no, and what you guys are doing is fantastic. I think this is really neat. Looking forward to hearing it. Mm-hmm. And we'll put it up on our site.
Wonderful. Love it. I love it. Well, thank you so much, Michael. Really grateful to have you here.
Thank you. Enjoyed it.
Hey, everyone. Christian here with a few short things before you take off. A big thanks for tuning into another episode of Beyond the Bake Sale. Did you love the episode? Then we'd be grateful for a rating on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or Spotify. Don't want to miss our next episode? Then make sure you hit that subscribe button. Want to collaborate on something? Have a story that you want to tell? Have feedback for us? Then shoot us a message by heading to our website at www.btbs.ca. While you're there, you can follow us on social, read our blog, and also listen to past episodes. But above all, thank you for committing to moving beyond the bake sale.